The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program was pre-recorded and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
It's time now for a smart, plain talk regarding politics, Israel, and the law. This is the Victory Hour with Andrew Parker of Parker Daniels Keyboard. Wise counsel, winning results. Now, here's your host, Andrew Parker.
I'm impressed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with his influential friends. He's got very big connections, and I follow his directions. Bernie knows his way around. And so
it's Sunday, 4 o'clock. And what does that mean? It means it's the best hour in radio of the week. It is the Victory Hour. I'm Andrew Parker, and every Sunday, 4 to 5 p.m., we gather. And I thank you once again for joining us. We gather to discuss politics, Israel, and the law. Not always in that order. Some may fall by the wayside until the following week, but we cover those subjects throughout the year. And it's been an interesting, nearly 7 years. And many of you have been with us from the beginning, and we thank you. And we welcome you once again to this Sunday's edition of the Victory Hour. Big thank you. Joining us today on the show, my good friend, attorney Jerry Anderson, one-time classmate of mine at the University of Minnesota Law School, and a very astute student also of the issues of the day. The policy issues that many of which we're all discussing, but some of which few of us are discussing, but should be discussing. And we're going to talk about that with Jerry today. You'll get some insights, some thoughts that maybe you haven't considered before. Before we get started on the give and take, Jerry, a bit more moderate, center-left. I am center-right, maybe a little more right. Depends on who you're talking to. But certainly in comparison to Jerry, I am. And we're going to go back and forth on some issues, much of which we'll agree, but a lot also we will disagree, or at least have a different take. And you'll hear our takes on various issues. I want to talk about education, licensure, police, what's going on in Memphis. I might ask Jerry what he thinks of Nikki Haley throwing her hat in the ring this past week. Talk about fentanyl a little bit. How have the Dems done in dealing with the drug issues and the death and destruction? Or the Republicans, for that matter. It's not like the issue became one yesterday. And that leads us, of course, to a discussion of immigration and what's happening at the border. But take out your number two pencil and your yellow pad and jot this down for the coming weeks. You know, a few weeks ago, we had Dean Phillips on the show. And since then, Pete Stauber was on the show last week. He had a great discussion with Congressman Stauber, and interesting. I was not paying too close of attention, but watching Fox News the other night, and they were talking about the very things that Pete Stauber and I had been talking about last Sunday. You know, so maybe they're listening to the Victory Hour as well. It's copycat TV, Fox News, of course. They need a few more watchers over there. And then Coming up in the coming weeks, so jot it down. Brad Finstad, we were planning on having him actually on this week, but his schedule got in the way. So we flip-flopped Jerry and Brad, and Congressman Finstad, I hope, will be joining us next Sunday on the Victory Hour, and if not, by the 19th. Then coming up at the end of the month, Michelle Fischbach from the 7th Congressional District will be joining us on the Victory Hour. As you know, it is the Minnesota Congressional Delegation Parade coming through the Victory Hour. Tom Emmer and Angie Craig, the last two to come aboard, will be in the month of March. And that will be interesting for sure. Both of them, the majority whip, Tom Emmer, and Democrat Angie Craig, who I think unexpectedly, frankly, won re-election in the 2nd Congressional District. And the polls had showed that she was running behind, leading right up to the day before the election. But she won, and she won handily in the 2nd. So join us for the parade. Now, you may note that two of the members of Congress in Minnesota are not joining the parade, and that's Betty McCollum and Ilhan Omar. Yes, indeed. Talk about kooks. All right. No, I don't. We don't use names here. It's disrespectful, and we respect opposing views, you know, but when it's a bit kooky, we sometimes call it out. So let's begin our discussion today on the Victory Hour with Jerry Anderson about, you know how it works, where you have a circle, and if you go far enough around the circle, you get back to the same spot where you started? Well, the far right and the far left have come together at that spot because the spectrum of political thought, in some respects, many respects, is like a circle. And if you go far enough on the fringe, you're on the other fringe. And so, Jerry, first I want to welcome you to the Victory Hour, but then I'd like you to comment on how it is that the far left and the far right have some similarities.
Well, what I find interesting is that they both, you know, are sure that the other side will, in the case of the left, if the right takes over, they'll destroy the world, right? And in the case of the right, they'll destroy the country. So they're both convinced the other side are their mortal enemies. But they think in a very similar fashion. They process information in a very similar dysfunctional way. And they are very much enabling each other. They each one yells and the other one has something to yell back.
Now, who are we talking about? When you talk about the radical left and, you know, the Trump rightists,
yep.
Who are we really speaking of? Because, you know, that line continues to move. Are you a Republican? Does that mean you're a crazy lunatic? Or are you a conservative right winger? Or are you a far right winger? Oh, my God, you go to church every Sunday. That means you're a far right winger. Who are we talking about?
Well, I will concede, as somebody that, as you correctly stated, is more center left, that the radical left has a much louder voice because they're represented in academia. They've been able to intimidate even corporate America and get a lot of these kind of woke perspectives out there in terms of how those companies present themselves.
They produce TV shows. They produce Hollywood movies.
They've got a lot of power. And the radical right, in my view, isn't a meaningful force in America the way the left did because it doesn't have the loud voice. So I'm talking about people that are on the polar extremes of both parties and outside of those parties. In other words, Green Party members, the six most progressive members of the Minneapolis City Council would be in that category, in my view. Not to disparage them, but I think they would be proud to say they're far left. That's who they are.
No, and that's how they got elected, in fact. Yeah. We're going to take a short break, but think about that. Think about, you know, how it is that Congress now is home to some of the most extreme political thinkers of our time. It wasn't always that way. Now, you know, people may have been accused of it, but it really wasn't. And not just Congress, but local elected officials, for sure, are on the fringe, even more so, arguably. And when we come back, we'll talk more about that and get into some policy debate and discussion. We are joined by political raconteur Jerry Anderson today on the Victory Hour. Stay with us. In the meantime, during this short break, go to ParkerDK.com. Learn more about the premier law firm downtown Minneapolis. Wise counsel, winning results. Parker Daniels Keyboard will be right back after this short break. Stay tuned. Send out the clowns. It's the Victory Hour. Parker and Anderson talking today to you. Some might say we're clowns. But, you know, you can learn something from clowns now and again. I'll tell you one thing. We're optimists at the end of the day. At the end of the day, things are going to go well. Particularly if we stay true to the American experiment that we are all engaged in every day. So, Jerry, we were talking about the radical left and radical right and who it is that we're talking about so that we don't envelop the entire political spectrum within those terms. And, of course, labels are one of the big problems. I mean, you're labeling the other side this or that, and many people, you know, don't understand who you're intending to include. So what are your thoughts on who's included?
Well, I think I defined the radical left fairly well, and these folks would proudly embrace that title, right?
Yeah,
they
would.
They don't view it as pejorative. The right side would probably view it negatively, potentially people like Boebert and Taylor Greene on the Republican side, and then some of the fringe organizations that kind of, you know, embrace some of the ideas that they have that are really pushing the envelope.
So if you voted for Donald Trump, are you a radical rightist?
Absolutely not. Many of my friends and family members voted for him both in 2016 and even 2020 because they were so concerned about the left tilt and their concerns that Biden would be a weak president that would give in to a lot of those points of view that they found more dangerous even than...
Sounds like you have smart family members.
I mean, what happened, Jerry?
I'm a
strong Trump opponent, but I've never had a problem with Trump supporters. I get it. I get where they're coming from. I still do.
All right. So if, you know, you have these issues that arise from the left, from the right, the attacks one to the other, the inability to come to compromise because it might give the other side a victory, which drives policy, whatever kind of policy we're talking about, into the ditch. I mean, that's what happens from it. You know, as I've said many times on this show, Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill could sit down and do a deal, one of the most consequential in our lifetimes as related to Social Security and the saving of that, as well as tax policy. And if they can do it, you couldn't find two people politically more disagreement. Why aren't we able to do it today?
Well, I think because the folks that I mentioned share a couple traits that I'd like to highlight. The first one being that they demonize their opponents. They don't view their opponents as misguided, but evil, to be destroyed or canceled rather than negotiated with and convinced. They both favor anecdotes over hard data. You see that a lot with police shootings. We get these outrageous cases that we all know the names of these folks, but there are 10 million in a typical year. There are 10 million arrests in the United States.
Encounters, I believe.
It's arrests, 10 million arrests.
Really?
Yep, you can check it. 10 million arrests. And in a bad year, about 1,000 suspects die in these encounters / arrests. So in other words, about 1 in 10,000 arrests results in a death of a suspect. Should we get that number down? Absolutely. Should we do everything we can to teach police de-escalation, bring in mental health professionals, avoid, you know, try to get these numbers more in line with other Western countries? Absolutely. But pretending that it's much more common than it is by highlighting the most outrageous kind of, you know, man bites dog stories again and again on the media and giving many folks the impression that these odd cases are the norm. We just don't see them every day. is caused it to be almost impossible to have a rational debate about how to reform policing in a meaningful way. And here in Minneapolis, of course, we saw the mass exodus of cops after the social unrest arising from George Floyd's killing. And what happened? We had a massive increase in violent crime affecting, tragically, folks in the poorest neighborhoods, hardworking people who are trying to get on the first rungs of the ladder. Their lives have been greatly disrupted by bad policy.
And what has happened, to be clear, to run this full circle, the media drives the message. People take to the streets believing in the message. It translates into policy then, real policy, where the most far left prosecutors get elected in these counties and they end up driving crime further to the roof. And they get in office only because of the media's narrative that drives the electorate, that drives them to their position, and then they make the matters worse and worse. How is it for cops? Nearly impossible. Let's talk about what happened in Memphis recently.
Well, what happened there was outrageous. Anybody that's seen the videos, no, you don't want to convict people based on a video. You know, they're going to be tried just like everybody else, subject to all the benefits that the accused have in the United States, right, accused of a crime. But there's no question it was outrageous. The question is, how should we respond? And here in Minnesota, there's already a group of activists out, you know, within a day or two of the video coming out saying, we have to do more. We have to change everything. We have to change, unravel the system. I had some quotes from the Star Tribune. They said that we need to commit to ending the systems, whatever that means, and making, quote, real legislation that addresses the issues of accountability. They seem to have missed that we've already made some very substantial reforms here at the state level. The manner in which Floyd was restrained has been banned. There's now a legal duty on police officers to intervene when they believe that a fellow officer is violating the rights or potentially injuring a suspect or a citizen. That's all been changed. Plus, there are massive efforts on police departments across Minnesota and across the country to find better ways to bring non-police actors into situations where there's medical emotional distress. So all those things are happening. But if you listen to the activists, backed up really by the media, you take a case of these outrageously behaving officers and act like
it's like it's the norm.
That's not the norm. That's a one in a million type case when we see that thing happen, just like George Floyd. The only other one I can think of is the Tony Timpa case in Dallas in 2016.
And when that does happen, A, we can have more training, no question. But most importantly, they're brought to justice, they're prosecuted, and what happens to people when they do that will happen to them.
Yeah, there's no.
That's what a country is, a rule of law does.
And there's no question that the old blue wall has really fallen. It really fell with the Floyd case, where we had multiple police officers, the MPD, testifying against Chauvin and stating that's not how we want to do business. That's not us. So, but what frustrates me is that the activists don't see that progress. And we could have the most progressive police departments in every city in America, and there's going to be bad cops that are going to do bad things. The problem is we highlight those crazy, isolated incidents as that's the normal way that policing happens.
Here's another story that goes along with it, but it's on the flip side. I received an email this week from Sheriff David Clark, and many of us know Sheriff Clark. He's been on a number of shows and is a staunch supporter of law and order and justice. And he writes that a progressive DA wants to sentence Sergeant Josh Blake to 99 years in prison for doing his job. This is one of the results that comes out of this attack of the police and district attorneys being elected by the media driving the narrative. In 2020, an anti-police mob in Austin, Texas, started rioting, eventually blocking a major highway. The mob threw rocks and other objects at the officers. Josh and his fellow officers deployed non-lethal beanbag rounds to stop the rioters from attacking. What did progressive DA Jose Garza do? Did he indict the rioters for arson, looting, and assault? No. He indicted Josh Blake and 19 other officers for committing first-degree felonies. Josh was charged with two counts of aggravated assault, which could mean 99-year sentence. It won't, but it could. Josh and his wife don't have the means to hire a lawyer. Thankfully, they're being supported by others who are able to provide him with a legal defense. But it is this kind of example where police are going out to protect the community, to protect law-abiding citizens. They are getting no support in doing it. And why would somebody want to become a Josh Blake where they are facing a jail sentence, a long-term incarceration, for doing their job?
Well, I don't know the facts of that particular case, so I'm going to push back a little bit in that you would certainly agree that there are cases when police, even when they're acting appropriately to stell violence or econ violence or whatever, they can go overboard. You'd agree with that?
No, there's no question they can go overboard, yeah. But if they're acting appropriately, non-lethal violence, and listen, it's tough out there on the streets. Sometimes they have to be aggressive. And if you get into a position where you're engaging with the police, where they have to do that, you know, you shouldn't be in that position, and that's your problem.
Right. And what they're talking about here locally is trying to get the Minnesota legislature to have more liability imposed on cops and things like that, which are going to make it even harder to recruit people. So I disagree with that. We've demonstrated across the country now in a number of incidents that there's real criminal accountability when police officers do things like what happened to Floyd and what's now happened in Memphis. So it's tragic to me that folks on the left side of the issue, they don't seem to care when the policies they push forward result in massive, more violent crime in neighborhoods of people they claim to care about. That's what disturbs me about it.
We're going to take a quick break and come right back and talk about other policy issues, including education here in Minnesota and elsewhere, licensing issues, the case involving the teacher at Hamlin, religious freedom, as well as maybe talk about the fentanyl issue. You know, you heard me last week, if you were listening in on the Victory Hour, talk about the outrageous policy decisions our elected officials have employed to deal with one of the most deadly and dangerous issues that we face, and that is fentanyl coming over the border and killing our youth and destroying the fabric of our society. We're going to be right back with the Victory Hour. Make sure you stay with us. Go to ParkerDK.com during this short break and think about some of these issues, because you get to vote, and we got to put people in office who know how to deal with them a bit better than we're currently doing. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back. It's the Victory Hour. I'm Andrew Parker, and thank you once again for joining us to talk politics, Israel, and the law. And note that each week, if you miss us from 4 to 5 on 1280 AM The Patriot, you can listen from 6 to 7 on Freedom 1570. And, of course, you can always live stream from wherever you are or pick us up on the podcast, the Andrew Parker Podcast, anytime during the week, month, or year. And you can go back. We got, I think it's more than 300 episodes by now. You can listen to the episode we had Diamond and Silk on the show, and you won't hear Diamond again, unfortunately. It was a great show, and we will miss her. Jerry, before we broke, we were talking about the issue of policing and how we are dealing with law and order in this country. Those who break the law often getting more attention, support, and kind of being lifted up in comparison to the victims. Victim support is by the wayside. And I'm talking about victims of crime. I'm also talking about victims related to drugs. The amount of drugs that are coming across the border now in the form of fentanyl This is not OxyContin, which was an enormous problem, many deaths a decade or two ago. This is fentanyl, which now is a whole new measure. And the drugs that have come across the border could kill every American twice over. And what are we doing about it? Isn't this a crisis of national concern and import that there should be a policy at the federal level to deal with?
Well, I think this is a good example of why we need to have the middle driving the conversation, whatever the topic is, whether it's border security, whether it's police reform, whether it's, abortion, even sensitive issues like that. So right now, instead, we have people yelling at each other. So we've got folks that are basically anti-immigration who are throwing out ideas with very little thought. And there's folks that think we should have absolutely open borders. The question is, what is the impact of the open border? I don't know the answer to that. But what I want to have is people that look at the issues. Are there really large amounts of illegal drugs coming across because we don't have a physically secure border? I don't know the answer to that. Someone does. And we need to base policies upon what is the answer. What is the answer, and is what's
the best way to manage it? Well, the seizure of illegal drugs coming across the border in states like Texas and Arizona is up well into double digits percentage-wise, month in, month out. And it's just pouring across.
But is that really how most of it gets here? Maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe you do.
Well, there's a ton that is getting here in that way. And we talked about it a few weeks ago on the Victory Hour. And I'm talking about not guessing or estimating. This is seized drugs that have been obtained through arrest or interdiction. And so it's a real issue, and it's one that is these drugs quickly move out and get dispersed into areas across the country, mostly cities and urban areas. And our kids are being ravaged by it, mainly our kids, into older adults.
So that really highlights the need for some rational conversations, because I feel like it's become a bitterly partisan issue.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be.
There's this perception that an open border is beneficial. The conservative right, especially on Fox News, would say the Democrats want the borders open because they think they're going to get more voters that way. Ignoring the fact that many Latino voters are tilting conservative at a rapid rate as soon as they get established here. So that's not an intelligent way to have the conversation. The right way to have it is what bad things versus good things, good workers, people that are coming here for the right reasons, are spilling across the border, and how do we control that in a way that helps
everybody? Well, what I hear on Fox News, and maybe I'm just listening a little bit differently than you are, just because of our perspectives, I hear on Fox News a discussion of all of the important policy issues and impacts as might occur at a JFK school or the Hubert Humphrey Institute, a policy analysis on Fox News about the impacts of immigration and open borders. And they start to eliminate all the reasons why the Democrats would oppose shutting down securely the border and then developing a plan for having a big, wide open door that many Republicans agree with, because they are business Republicans and economic, fiscal, conservative Republicans. And so they believe in having this workforce come across the border and become American citizens. But when they can't explain why the Democratic policy is just to have this crisis at the border and not do anything, they start to move into the conspiracy type of thinking that, well, what other reason could they have other than to cement their power through the support of illegals that they believe will ultimately vote for them?
Well, it seems that, there are issues that are always going to be divisive between the two main parties, but there's some that should be fundamental. Immigration policy, should be fundamental, that we're going to have one that's designed to promote upward mobility, citizenship, you know, enriching the country with new folks like we've done for the whole history of the country.
I think neither side wants to give the other a win. And we are all suffering because of it. And it flows over into, literally, into drugs coming across the border. What about what happened, now let's get into freedom and liberty and academic freedom in this case. What happened recently at Hamline, if you are unaware, a art professor at Hamline showed what was a historically important picture of Muhammad. It is actually beautiful art being viewed in the court, in the classroom. And she gave warning and went overboard to talk about when this was going to be viewed and the importance of it. And if you were uncomfortable, you didn't have to be there that day, you would not be tested on it, et cetera. Yet she got initially fired for this.
So it really just shows how far the pendulum has swung, right? So when I was a kid going to public school, we had fish on Friday, you know, for Lent. On the other hand, we had major exams, games, school events on high holy days. So totally disregarding the Jewish minority.
Yes.
Totally disregarding it. So nobody wants to go back to that world. And we have to recognize that there are different religious traditions all over America, particularly here in the Twin Cities, and we got to respect, you know, major holidays, whether it's Ramadan, things like that. We have to be sure that students and people in the workplace should be comfortable with dress that's associated with their faith, things like that. This is not that. This is about academic freedom in direct conflict with religious dogma. Religious dogma. Can you imagine? There are tens of millions of Americans that believe the biblical story of creation to be literally true. Tens of millions. Can you imagine a biology professor, an astronomy professor, or a geology professor giving a trigger warning? Oh, by the way, we're going to talk about stuff that makes it sound very unlikely that Noah's Ark was real today. We're going to talk about something that makes it very unlikely that God created the stars on this day, because we know that we believe the universe is billions of years old. We don't do that. We'd never do that. So this debate back and forth about whether showing this photograph was Islamophobic is just absurd. Teachers should be able to have academic discussions that offend religious sensibilities, because they do that all the time. We've just picked and chosen who we're going to worry about being offended. And look at the boycott movements and campuses across the Israel boycott movements.
Yeah.
You're supposed to just listen to that and shrug your shoulders.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be triggered by that. So it's a ridiculous double standard that ironically will make it less comfortable for students of religious minorities, because other people will get, they will say, there's going to be pushback. They're going to say, well, wait a minute. I'm a Seventh-day Adventist. I don't believe in this or that, but I don't expect professors to accommodate that belief for me every day. So religious intolerance is something we should guard against zealously, and openness to faith and accommodating.
Well, academic freedom has been,
should overrule it, in my opinion.
Yeah, academic freedom has been thrown to the wayside. I mean, it hardly even exists anymore. It's just been taken over by woke culture, by the woke institutional dogma that has come into particularly higher education, but across the board, down to K-8.
But it's on the other side too, Andy. I want to get this in there. So, you know, in Florida and other states, they're talking about banning critical race theory. The way to I think it's bad scholarship, but the way to challenge it is to discuss it and address it and talk about its flaws, not banning it. You want to make something popular and intriguing to young people, ban it. And look what DeSantis just did now in Florida. He says they're not going to allow this AP African-American history
class. Yeah,
but
they're requiring critical race theory to be taught, and not taught as one of many, but taught as, you know, this is the way you should think. It's an indoctrination. That's where the problem arises. When we used to get education on different sort of policy ideas, you'd have a paragraph on Ronald Reagan, you'd have a paragraph on Jimmy Carter, you'd have a paragraph on JFK, you'd have all these different views of fiscal policy if you were learning civics. And nowadays, it's, no, this is the way you think. You need to understand what DEI is, and you need to believe in it and live it. And if you don't, you're cast aside.
I think it's coming from both sides, Andy, but we're on a break here, so we'll catch it on the other side.
All right, we got a little carried away. We're on a break, and we're going to be back very shortly. But in the meantime, go to ParkerDK. But I want to also ask you, go to MyPillow.com. Pick up some of their bedwear or their pillows. They're excellent. Got them all here on the Victory Hour. Use your offer code VICTORY for up to 66% off MyPillow.com. We'll be right back. We're with Jerry Anderson, political rock on tour, and we have a number of additional policy issues to discuss. Stay with us. We're back. It's the Victory Hour. Talking to Jerry Anderson, longtime friend, great attorney, and one-time law school classmate of mine. And we're talking policy and politics, something that near and dear to Jerry's heart, and he's very knowledgeable about, and I always enjoy discussing with him because we don't agree. We don't agree often, but we come from a fairly similar root foundation, which allows our discussions to be respectful and one that we gain some real value from. Unlike many from the left and the right that gain very little value because they're talking over each other, around each other, often raising their voices, and the louder one wins and the other walks away. How can we get out of this cycle, Jerry?
Well, I think those of us in that, you know, center-right, center-left perspective, we need to start pushing back. We need to make our voices heard because many folks have completely tuned out. They're not paying attention. They might go in and vote every 4 years because they feel they got an obligation, but they can't stand listening to it. So start broadcasting those sensible views that people actually want to listen to and pushing back on the radicals on both sides. I think that's number one, not demonizing them either, not name calling, but saying, hey, we understand there's a lot of racism in America. We agree with that. We understand that the elites have pushed jobs overseas. You know, we understand that's a problem. But say, we got to try to find ways to solve the problem. So we're not going to persuade them. So our audience for our efforts won't be the true believers on the different spectrums. It's people that are on the sidelines, the people in the middle. Get them to come back and pay attention a little bit more and get involved. And as I said earlier, nothing fuels backlash, conspiracy theories like banning things. So I don't want to ban even ideas that I really disagree with. I don't want them banned. I want them out there that they can be debated and challenged rather than say we're not going to teach this class or we're not going to teach this theory.
So, for example, this week, Mike Lindell was on Jimmy Kimmel, and they had him sitting in one of those claw machines with the stuffed animals that you go to the fair. He was in the machine. And so they, you know, Jimmy Kimmel spent the whole, you know, 20 minutes that they were talking or however long, ridiculing Mike Lindell. And Mike genuinely believes and believes strong evidence that these election machines should not be handling the tabulation or counting of votes. Whether you agree with that or disagree with that, does he have the right to say it?
Of course he has a right to say it. And I didn't see that show. I have seen him on Kimmel before, and Lindell seems to have a good sense of humor about it. He knows he's going to be ridiculed. The audience is not going to be favorable to his points of view.
Right.
So he's got a good sense of humor. In fact, frankly, I think he disarmed a lot of people in thinking he's this, people on the left that think he's this demonic figure when he's just a good-natured businessman who has some views that I don't agree with at all.
Yeah.
But he's not a bad guy.
Well, and whether he's a bad guy or not, he has a right to say it. This is his belief. It goes into the milieu of the marketplace of ideas, the public square. And from that, you're going to have all these views, and hopefully the best of them will rise to the top.
Yes.
But what will rise to the top is what the people believe in, ultimately.
There's great evidence when you get surveys of various controversial topics that a vast amount of Americans are in the middle. They're reasonable on just about everything. I really believe that. That's why I'm optimistic that we'll get through this period of noise. But it's been a long period. It's been a couple decades, really, of decline of discourse and the quality of policymaking because you've got people on both sides. So we need to push on them. Those of us that care on the right and on the left need to push against our own folks. I'm not going to convince a conservative Trump supporter to go against Trump. On the other hand, I might convince a very woke liberal mind to realize that shrinking the police forces in major cities has been a disaster for the people they claim to care about in those toughest, poorest neighborhoods.
I've said it often on this show, that very point. So let me turn to politics a bit, Jerry. Nikki Haley this week announced that she is going to run for president. Talk about, some would argue, a common sense Republican. I think given the name of an establishment Republican. What do you think of Nikki Haley in the fight?
What I know about her, I like a lot. And if I could just quick go back to the election here in the second district, where Angie Craig came on really strong, I think she did it because she did some things we're talking about right now, listening to people on the other side. So all I know about her is she was a very well-respected governor of South Carolina. She was ambassador during the Trump years. And now I'm going to sound like I'm an identity politics guy, but I would love to see a diverse ticket on both sides in 2024. I really, you know, I'm going to sound like I'm identity, but the fact that she's of Indian descent, she's of the Sikh faith, I think she might have married somebody who's Baptist. She's in the South and all that. But I think we need to get away from the idea on the left that the Republican Party is a white, conservative, Christian, rural, gun-owning group of people. It's a diverse group of people in both parties, and we need to bring those out in the leadership roles.
And I think the Republican Party elected more minorities, more women to Congress than at any other time in our history, and they're continuing to grow the tent. And that's a problem for the Democratic Party, and it's one that they're going to face in the coming years. However, it sure seems like the Electoral College, something that the Democrats have wanted to get rid of, may be the savior for them, because if Pennsylvania and Michigan have gone now to the blue team and are not coming back, I don't know that that's the case, but it sure looks difficult for Republicans in Pennsylvania and Michigan. Well, that makes it almost impossible for Republicans to win the White House unless they sweep the board otherwise.
Yeah, Democratic leadership and Republican leadership, they seem to be oblivious to the fact that as we become much more racially diverse, people are not going to latch on to one party permanently. Yeah, traditionally, it seems like the Democratic Party has been the landing place for immigrants wherever they're from, whether it's Ireland, you know, 150 years ago, or Italy 100 years ago, or Latin America 50 years ago, or Somalia 20 years ago. But that's going to change. A lot of those folks are entrepreneurial, highly upwardly mobile, socially conservative. That's why I think the Republican Party should reach out to them, and the Democratic Party should stop taking them for granted.
Yeah, you know, if you look at the Democratic Party, and African Americans in this country are starting to wake up to it, the Democratic policy, liberal policy, is not helpful to the African American community. It has been harmful, and we're talking about for decades, 70, 80 years. And this sort of continuation is really something that I think is going to end very soon. Jerry, thank you very much for coming on the Victory Hour this Sunday. It's been an enjoyable discussion, as it always is. We'll have you on again. We've covered a number of issues, and I think gotten quite a bit of interest from folks out there. And next week on the Victory Hour, we hope to have Brad Finstad. We've got coming up again in the coming weeks, Finstad, Fischbach, Emmer, and Angie Craig, all coming on the Victory Hour during the month of February and March. So make sure to tune in. And you're gonna learn something. Politics, Israel, and the law each week on the Victory Hour. Go to parkerdk.com. Wise counsel, winning results. Until next week, have a great week.
I'm impressed with his influential friends. He's got very big connections, and I follow his directions. Bernie knows his way around, and so I always do what Bernie recommends.
You've been listening to The Victory Hour with Andrew Parker of Parker Daniels Keyboard. Wise counsel, winning results. For more information, go to ParkerDK.com. Until next time, he leaves you with these words from Winston Churchill. All the great things are simple, and many can be expressed in a single word. Freedom, justice, honor, duty, mercy, and hope.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.